Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in
a creepy way. Hey. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2005 J-horror film The Booth, directed by Yoshihiro Nakamura and starring several, like seven or eight cast members. It's a very small cast. And I'm going to give a little disclaimer up front. First of all, the IMDb lists all the cast members' names, but none of the characters' names. There is no plot synopsis in IMDb. It's just a very vague kind of almost like a teaser. And then I went onto Wikipedia and it gives like three facts, none of which are the plot. So, you know, we're going to wing it, or I'm going to wing it a little bit. It's an hour and 13 minute horror movie, which I think is perfectly delightful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a very straightforward plot.
Yeah. So, what'd you think of The Booth?
That's a great question. Way to put me on the spot right off the bat.
Oh, I can ramp up if you like.
No. I thought it was okay. It's one of those movies that I think it needs to sit with you for a while, because when it was first over, I was completely underwhelmed, but it also stuck with me. It's a movie that has made me think about it in the few days since I watched it. So I think that actually speaks better of it than my initial impression. It's a movie that is very small on plot, but big on mood and vibe. I think it does those things really effectively.
Agreed.
So I'm giving it a, it was pretty good.
Okay, so I love the setting, which is why I love the movie Pontypool. And I know I love Pontypool more than you did.
Talk radio too.
Oh yeah. I just love that it's kind of like a movie on a plane or something. There's just a very small environment, so it gives you like that stage play kind of feel to it.
Right.
And that often works best in for horror situations. And, you know, I don't believe in ghosts, and, you know, the whole, like, Japanese ghost movies, if they're not jump scary, I mean, it's not like it disturbs me. So, or maybe if it's gross, like, there are some clever things, but I don't get the cultural impact, probably. And I don't know the rules of Japanese ghosts either.
So, like, The Grudge, that movie didn't creep you out?
Bored me to tears. Yeah. I mean, it was jump scares, whatever. But other than that, it was like, you know, a bottle of conditioner would have solved that whole thing. Kind of the same as, you know, like, Ringu and Ring were good. They were very interesting. I liked it. You know, Ring 2 is sort of more of the same. And, you know, Ring 3 was Money Grab. Or Rings, or whatever it's called. Like, it was a Johnny Galecki movie. Yeah, I mean, it was fine, but it's not like I'm ever worried. Like, I'll never be popping in a videotape thinking, oh no, I'm going to die in 7 days and whatever. Whereas if you're walking alone at night, or you're spending the night in the woods and you hear funny sounds behind you, you could actually instantly think back to, you know, Michael Myers or Jason, or, you know.
Or anytime you're driving home alone in the middle of the night and you drive over a bump,
Yes. Thanks for the ride, lady.
Mm-hmm. That one still gets me.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a horrible movie, as it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
The more I think about that movie, Creepshow 2, the more I just hate it. So when I first watched this a couple months ago, I was going through a big Asian horror dive on Shudder to make most of that $5 a month or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I found a movie on Shudder called Hellmouth, which is written by the same guy and has stars Stephen McCaddy as the Pontypool. So if you think nice. Add really bad sci-fi channel type special effects to an otherwise, you know, charming little Canadian horror movie, it's fine. I like Stephen McCaddy. I like Anthony Burgess is a weird writer. Like, I don't want to buy his book about Pontypool.
So you watched a handful of Asian horror movies.
Yeah.
And the one you picked to talk about was The Booth.
That sounds like a condemnation. That's what that sounds like.
No, I'm just trying to dig in and understand. I want to unpack this.
I liked it, like, because it was just a tasty treat. I mean, it's pretty standard.
It really was. You know, an hour and 13 minutes, that was a treat.
Yeah.
That was great. I want more hour and 13 minutes.
I know. Yeah, well, when we transition and you join Journey and I's Full House podcast, you'll just have like 22-minute episodes to talk about every week.
Excellent.
I mean, it'll be three times a week, but still. Yeah, The plot is pretty simple. I guess we can dive in. By the way, the plot things in here are wrong. Like, they say his name wrong in IMDb, the name of the character. The name of the main character is Shingo Katsumura, I think. And Shingo is the host of, like, a late-night dating advice slash... I guess they play songs in it too, show that goes from midnight to 2 a.m. in Tokyo. But before this starts, we get the opening of something that happens. It just is black and white. I don't think they put a date on it, but it seemed to be like 1950s sort of thing.
Old. It was old.
Exactly.
He didn't have a microphone. He actually was talking into a phone.
Well, yeah. And he, this old host is talking to a person, you know, a love talk show, and it talks about a love lost or whatever. And it was, she describes a situation where she and her fiance were going to get married, but the one's family disapproved greatly. So the host is trying to give advice about, don't worry about him, they'll come around, whatever. And she's like, no, they won't. And by the way, we've already done it. Or no, we made a pact, a suicide pact. He's like, oh, that's a horrible idea. Because, yeah, well, it's too late. I've already done it. He's like, what do you mean? This happened 30 years ago. What? Turns out the guy was the radio host. She killed herself, but he didn't, and now she's haunting him or something.
Yeah, she's a little annoyed that he backed out of the suicide pact.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, I kind of artfully said that little piece there, but oh well. It's going to be a sign of this program, because...
Yeah, and what I did not appreciate about the beginning part of this movie is, if we are to believe that she is a vengeful spirit coming back to get him because he is the one that backed out of the suicide pact, I would have expected him to be a little bit more creeped out, or at least a little bit more attentive when somebody called him up and starts talking about a suicide pact between lovers.
Exactly. Since he
at one point in his life had entered into one.
Yeah.
Did not seem to faze him at all.
It did not. No. Perhaps he just moved past it. He's not very sentimental.
Maybe that's just like his move.
Perhaps, yes. And also, so at the end of this scene, after he has this conversation with a ghost with a contractual dispute, since he didn't fulfill his part of the contract. He is overwhelmed and hangs himself in the studio, the booth, the recording booth itself, inside Studio 6. So flash forward 30 years later, or whatever it is, and actually that's not even stated. It's just modern times. When we have, Shingo, it has his own modern version of that same program. And it's actually, I thought it was very stylish, like the flashy way you kind of introduce him goes from that old black and white to like the flashy quick cut introduction to Shingo and going into his studio. But they are apparently moving buildings the next day. So he is doing this recording on, he is not aware of it, but they have moved to the alternate studio, Studio 6. So he has to go down and catch his show as it begins. And he puts on these old crappy headphones, which I like. They're kind of disintegrating around the ears. And he has very sensitive skin, we learn later.
Yes. I like the way they introduce the more modern times. I mean, you get right away what kind of person he is.
Yeah.
He thinks he's the shit. He kind of doesn't treat people very well, but is charming and people like him, at least on the surface.
Yeah, well, it seems the ladies like him, but none of the men like him. But right. He doesn't know this. This is kind of a Christmas Carol tale of discovery for Mr. Shingo. For Shingo-san? No, I won't do that ever again.
No, please do.
Yeah, I may have actually told you at the time that this was a Korean movie, but it is most definitely not. This is 100% a Japanese movie. So, yeah, so we get into although it says in the subtitles, like Tokyo Love Lines, in actual Japanese, Tokyo Love Connection is what he calls his show, which I think is pretty funny.
Do you think his son has COVID?
Perhaps.
Okay.
Yeah. I was thinking that he let his wife have sex with a professional wrestler and taped it.
Did Chuck Woolery do that?
No. Bubba the Love Sponge.
Oh.
And Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
That's what brought down, what, Gawker, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, never trust a guy named Bubba the Love Sponge. Never trust a guy who calls himself the Hulk and refers to you always as brother.
Brother.
Did you know he had a line of pasta shops in the 80s?
Hulk Hogan?
Yes. It was like I forget what it was called, but it was like Hulkamania pasta. And it was a pasta bar where they had, you know, you came in and you asked for whatever kind of pre-made pasta they had. And then you asked for whatever kind of pre-made sauce that they had. And you sat down and had your carb-loaded meal.
Wow. How inventive.
This is going to be a voyage of discovery for us, Taylor. Because like I said, other than having watched this movie for the third time and finished it about 20 minutes ago, I don't have a lot of notes for this whole thing. It's called Pasta Mania.
Of course it is. The most awkward thing about his trial was about how long he had to testify about it and how detailed he had to get about how Hulk Hogan was a character, and it was he considered that to be completely different than his real life persona, Terry Bollea. And he had to testify about how in real life, Terry Bollea was not nearly as well endowed as the character of Hulk Hogan was, as evidenced by the videotape that Gawker put on the internet.
Yeah.
And he had to do that completely calm and straight-faced and just like it's a normal conversation.
In his suit.
Mm-hmm.
So, by the way, the menu, I was not kidding. It's five different kinds of pasta and five different kinds of sauces, and it comes with a side of garlic bread. And then you can put things on the side, but that's about it. It is strictly a carb place.
Right on.
Yeah. Oh, if you want to get big and strong, well, if you want to get big, you certainly can go to Hulk Pasta Mania. Anyway, so back to Shingo's Tokyo Connection, where the theme of tonight's radio program is, what is it? Unpardonable words.
Yes.
Like what things a lover has said to you, whether they said it in a dramatic moment or even just an offhand moment that you can just never forgive.
Yeah, and he takes calls from, like, children.
Yeah, yeah, his first caller is in the sixth grade. So, yeah, he's got, like, a little sidekick or whatever. Like, a little sort of sycophantic Weasley guy that keeps his hand over his mouth. And you're like, what is this? You turn on later.
Mm-hmm.
Once he needed a tic-tac, and that was it.
That one time, and he's scarred ever since.
Yes. Because of the offhanded, unpardonable words of one Shingo. Which, by the way, that is, in a nutshell, is this movie. Is the rest of the movie, probably the next, you know, maybe hour and 5 minutes, are just learning that everyone, every other character you meet, he has said unpardonable words to. And it has affected them negatively.
Hey, yeah, so we listen to calls and he gives advice. And I think it's pretty obvious after a couple that the calls are describing things that are at least analogous to events in Shingo's life, if not outright the actual description of what happened to him. So that makes it kind of an eerie thing as he is wrestling with what we also find out is a guilty conscience.
Yes. Although, as it turns out, the conscience, the guilty part of it, what he did, well, I don't know, I guess it was pretty bad. It's not quite as bad as what he did earlier that day.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. You don't think thing in sixth grade was, okay, yeah. Yeah. That is the actual thing.
No, he's moved on to the thing from sixth grade. He got over that guilt and that taught him how to be a better sociopath.
Sorry, Mabuchi.
Mabuchi?
Mabuchi. That's the girl's name. Last night's girl's name. Yeah.
The news reporter. The radio news reporter.
Yes, the news reporter. New announcer, whatever. Yes. Okay. So, he is in the booth with his little sidekick guy that wants to do a tic-tac. And then in the control room, we have... like a board operator who's a female, and there is a the producer guy who is a male, and there's another guy back there. I can only describe him as the guy in the red shirt from some sort of deer park. I had to stop and figure out what the back of his shirt said. It talks about don't feed the deer, don't litter because you're killing the animals. Seems very dramatic.
Turns out, I learned this from my wife, especially in the late 80s and early 90s. As you can imagine, there was a trend here of Japanese or Chinese characters being very popular as decoration.
Yes.
And worn by people who had no idea what it said.
Yes.
The same was true in reverse.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
So my wife has tales of lots of hilarious shirts in Korea that were in English but made absolutely no sense.
Which is awesome. So yeah, my pausing and figuring it out still did not answer any questions about that character.
That was not a good time investment.
No, I guess not. Anyway, yeah, and then we meet Mabuchi, who is this, she is the news announcer, news anchor, whatever, that comes in and to present the news. And then because she doesn't show up at, in the beginning, we meet the new, like, understudy, whatever, or maybe just sports announcer. No, I guess it's just the understudy, right?
Mm-hmm. It was her first time doing it on air.
Yeah. And except for two characters who provide a little fun misdirection later, that's about the whole cast of the show.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun, and it kind of ticks through all these things, and there's threads get weaved about the phone calls, and but every one of the or in the beginning, this this sixth grade girl is talking about how she liked a boy and he was going to move away, and she was waiting to tell him that she liked him, you know, just before he moved away. And before she could tell him he liked him, she said, like, shut up, or what are you staring at, ugly?
He said that to her.
He said that. Yeah, the boy said that to her. Yes. But then the broadcast gets interrupted by a more an older voice, an older woman, who calls him a liar. Mm-hmm. And there's some squeaky sounds in the background. Sort of a metal on metal or seagull type sound.
Yes, the same sound that happened in Booth 6 in the olden days.
Did it?
Yeah. Yeah, there remember
was,
the...
There was the creaky... I mean, I know there was the static sound.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Not the swing sound, was it? Because the swing sound was very specifically his sixth grade experience.
You may be right. I only saw the movie once.
Either way, the whole thing is completely reminiscent of what happened in olden times. Which leads me to a question in about 3 minutes when we're done talking about this movie. But so we take these calls and each, but they are speculating on air and then apparently on the internet by email. What that interruption was, what that voice was, what that weird sound was. But Shingo doesn't like it because they called him a liar. and a lot of this movie is actually fun because it's just like the camera looking at him and he's getting more and more uncomfortable. And he's kind of unraveling during this whole thing. And I thought he played it pretty well.
Everybody did.
I guess here's the spoiler territory. Definitely, if you want to watch The Booth, you can. I actually rented this from the library, so it may be hard to find otherwise. But, definitely skip 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Well, I don't know. Look at the notes. I'll tell you when House Gaming starts.
Yeah, because there is one thing that I thought this movie did exceptionally well.
Okay, cool. So, yeah. So here we go. Spoiler alert has been sounded. Okay. So Shingo has been having a relationship that started out as like a one night stand, but he's so smooth that he has worked this into a longer relationship. Now, did she presumably break up with the other guy, or is she still dating the other guy?
Yeah, she never broke up with him.
Mabuchi. Yeah. So theoretically, they are still dating.
Yeah, she engaged, right? She was engaged.
So she's engaged to, turns out, the producer of the show, we find out later.
Mm-hmm.
But Shingo is slipping it on the side. And it's very convincing because she makes it clear, hey, this was just one night. But he's like, no, no, no. Finally, and last night, apparently, or early that day, he had broken up with her. And she is very upset about it. And they have a little argument at the end of which, in the car, by the way.
After they spent the night together, right?
Yeah, he got what he want, and he's kicking her out. By the way, I thought she was going to tell him she was pregnant. But no, they basically have a sort of a fight in the car, little pushing and shoving, and she grabs onto his hand and cuts him. So he kicks her literally out of the car, and she falls back and slams her head against a guardrail on the side of like a some sort of waterway.
Mm-hmm. Cracks her head open and slumps over,
which was not his intent.
Nope. That part is a horrible tragedy.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Yeah.
Unfortunate, but understandable.
Yes. So he
the
has...
next part is not. He sat there in shock for probably a few minutes. And then as he was starting to drive away, she opened the car door. She was not dead, as he feared. And she opened the car door and was trying to crawl in. This is a point where he could have helped her and maybe taken her to the hospital.
Yes.
But instead, he pushes her back out of the car and tries to drive away.
Except.
But, except that her dress is caught in the door. So he's actually dragging her along the road until the dress finally rips and the momentum carries her rather comedically over a cliff into the ocean.
So, again, a tragedy.
Mm-hmm. And he is starting to have hallucinations of her in the studio.
Yes. Or is he?
With, like, her face all messed up from the road rash. And
yeah. She's been drug on her face, or, like, half her face is all scabby. She looks into the actually, control room area of the studio, and she's sitting there in the background.
Right. And one of the news stories that the replacement news girl reads is about a woman's body who was washed up on shore nearby.
Yeah. So it's super Hitchcockian. Mm-hmm. About giving you all of these clues to lead you to believe what's going on.
Right.
All of which is actually true, because a woman's body was found. But she's not dead.
That part, I thought, was what they did exceptionally well.
Kinda. I do. On the third watching, I have one little quibble.
Okay.
But that's okay. Yeah. No, I thought they did exceptionally well, too. Because, you know, he's sort of freaking out, thinking he's been found out. And then this weird thing is happening to his radio show. And in the middle of it, he has to do his normal job, which consists of interviewing a chess master, formerly grandmaster, but was demoted to master, about his love life. It's so weird.
Mm-hmm. I love the little added touch that he had to go to the bathroom really badly.
Oh, yes.
Because, you know, even under ideal circumstances, if you really have to go, you're on edge.
So just before interviewing the chess master, he tries to go out of the studio, and that's when the producer tells him, no, you can't go to the bathroom because you'll be on the air in 20 seconds. So he goes in there and squeezes his crotch to prevent him from being, I guess, and sits down and has this weird interview with the chess master. And during all of the phone conversations and the interviews and stuff, he keeps drifting off and thinking of this horrible thing he just did. So he's not really paying attention to a lot of it, and that's kind of fun. So at the end of this whole interview, he sees that these two older guys came into the other part of the studio. And he immediately assumes they are policemen who have found the body of his girl, ex-girlfriend, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And she shows up in the background.
Yes, she shows up in the background. And so, but at this point, I think we're still led to believe that she's a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
So, he decides, nope, I don't need to take a bathroom break because I don't want to go get arrested by the police or whatever. I'll just stay in the booth afterward and look at my notes, which is pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, I watched this movie like 45 minutes ago, but chronology of this, he pees himself while Mabuchi comes in and does her thing, right?
Yeah, so that I really like that part of the movie, because he's freaking out. The tension is ratcheted up really high at this point. He's doing his leg-shaking thing. Those old guys, maybe cops, are out there. And then he has another hallucination of her in the producer's area, like seemingly an apparition starting to make her way. And the way she kind of slithers in between people.
Yes.
No one seems to acknowledge that she's there, which makes it look even more ghostly. And then she is slowly working her way into the booth, and he is getting super freaked out. And then she comes in and sits down across from him, and her face is all screwed up. And then she puts on headphones and starts reading the news. She's not dead.
As she's putting on the headphones, his little psychic guy goes, "Hey, what the fuck happened to your face?"
Yes.
And she never answers that question. She just puts on the headphones and starts reading the news very carefully and basically looking straight at him while she does so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he pees himself, which is always a tense moment.
Yes.
And then after that, she just goes back and like goes back in the other room. And it turns out. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, we get flashbacks that show that, everything happened as before, but she was not dead. She fell in the water and swam to shore and was rescued by some fishermen.
Yes, who warmed her up by a fire. I mean, it was a pretty long adventure for her.
Mm-hmm.
but her face has not been bandaged up in any way.
Nope.
Although the junior news girl does a really poor job of bandaging up later.
Yes.
But here's a question. Here's the only, again, the only real quibble I have is, so if she is still enfianced or whatever you called it with the producer guy,
mm-hmm.
why isn't he saying, hey, what the hell happened to your face? Or somehow talking to her or something. Maybe they're on the rocks too, but still, seems a little weird. But it's not his movie.
No, it's not.
Yeah, and then basically we just get this thing where it breaks in. He's coming to the end of his show, and he's just pretty much done. He's like out of energy. He's not his normal self. The script doesn't even have songs on it. He's like, fuck this. So then the show gets interrupted again, and they, you know, the whole team. Oh, by the way, sorry. During one of the events, let me flash back just a little bit. There's one other thing I thought was fun. He took a call from a guy who I don't even remember his problem, but it had to do with people talking behind his back, like a work situation. Or no, it was a love situation, but it was like somebody talked behind his back. And he gets increasingly frustrated with this guy who calls twice. And at the second time, he's like, okay, we're getting to a song or whatever. And then the booth tells him, okay, you're off the air. And the girl board operator cuts his mic and then fades it back up as he has this little rant about what a fucking moron. He needs to be institutionalized. And he hears this, not in his headphones because he's taking them off, but like on the studio monitor. And he and his little sidekick guy are like, ooh. And then, of course, the fader goes way back down again. He's like, what was that? And she's like, it's old equipment. But in the beginning, they told her, yeah, this is the equipment that all these board operators were originally trained on. So, anyway, she's a gloomy Gus kind of coworker.
She probably writes on a whiteboard.
Probably, yeah. Oh, I love whiteboards now. Anyway, so blah, blah, blah. We know that where this is headed. Shingo is eventually going to hang himself in the studio, in the booth.
Not before we get the Shyamalan type reveal that every call was actually about him.
Yes, every single call was about him. And that thing that happened in the sixth grade that, you know, I mean, he was a shit back then, too.
Yeah,
he really was. Horrible. Yeah, he not only did he torment this little girl who played the recorder, who had affection for him, but he did that very thing about calling her, hey, what are you staring at, ugly? And then he threw a rock, which hit her and made her fall off the swings and break her arm. And then...
And her face.
And then he convinced the other witness to lie about the whole thing and say, mm-hmm. I don't know, she must have fallen off. Ugly. And then, of course, he moves away because his family moved away. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. It all works out. So his only recourse is to hang himself from the cabling in the ceiling.
Yeah, like he should, because he's terrible.
Yeah, he's a terrible person. And then they kick to the song that, again, I don't have enough information about this movie to even find out what that song is.
Wow. Because you can't read the credits.
I can't read the credits. There's nothing on IMDb. There's nothing in Wikipedia. I think part of it, at least part of it, if not all of it, is in English. That song is.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like hair metal kind of, or hair band kind of sound to it. Kind of rocking.
Yep.
So it's fun. I like that.
Yeah, it was a fun ending.
Yeah.
Shingo-san, 曲いきますよ! Shingo-san, どうしました?
Is it a fake today, or is it just another file like Devil Plays? Be careful when you see the full moon light, the darkest sky, the deepest night. Without a sign of air, without a wind to feel, it comes and does. Does it? Yes, it do. Takes one walk stack, disintegrate. Just
yeah, so again, 73 minutes of movie. I found it charming. I mean, that's basically it. It's not great. It's just charming.
It was well crafted. It was very moody, very silly if you think about it, but it, in the moment it doesn't feel silly. So I think it had a thesis statement and it proved it. It did a good job. It did what it intended to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, that whole the plot was silly if you thought too much about it, that applies to a lot of horror movies. I mean, a lot of other movies, too, but...
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. You know, Rubik's Cube that gives you pseudo-sexual thrill, takes your body to hell, another dimension, piercings. It's a weird deal. So, Brother Jay would have hated this. So, this is a good one to do on a day off for him. Thank you for tolerating it. I know it wasn't your favorite, but... Again, this is the kind of movie I needed to get sort of, you know, like... Back in the swing of, you know, where like horror season is coming upon us and we're living through a pandemic. So, you know, it's fun.
Yeah, no, I'm not mad at this movie at all. It was a nice departure from the kind of movies we've been doing lately. And it was good. It was really quiet and moody, which for the times we're living in is really hits the sweet spot.
Yeah. You thought about it the next couple of days, but it's not like Hereditary or some sort of moody Frank Darabont, I hate audiences, missed kind of thing.
No, it's not.
It's just fun. Just plain fun. So, yeah. And again, it reminds me of Pontypool, and is as silly as Pontypool is, too. That is, I mean, the premise is so dumb, And so Tony, by the way, the premise of Pontypool, I would recommend you listening to our Pontypool podcast, but the premise of Pontypool is a virus that spreads by words, by language, specifically in that case, the English language. So I saw an interview with Anthony Burgess or Tony Burgess, the writer of that, who was also actually in the movie itself. I think it was all a Canadian thing. He must be a Canadian guy, and it's all a very cute Canadian production. Which, again, I find charming. He talks about how the book is also unreliable. Like, the book takes you in weird places and plays with language in a way that kind of puts you off kilter and whatever. So, I'm like, oh, no, I'm not going to get that kind of thing on audio. There's no way.
That movie was so dumb.
Oh, yeah.
And they were so self-serious.
And then at the end of that, the like post credit section of that movie.
I don't even remember.
Oh, you don't remember where, spoiler for Pontypool, where after the big zombie thing happens, all of a sudden you get this weird thing where Grant and the other girl
are like
talking in strange things in like an alternate universe or something. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Just batshit crazy.
Yep.
Yeah.
I remember that now.
Yeah.
It was almost like an outtake.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet so weird. Yeah, no, I periodically listen to the Pontypool radio play that came with the movie. It was like a special feature of the movie. And it's great. And I will fall asleep about half an hour, 45 minutes into it. So all I hear repeatedly is that first story about with that Grant Mazzy and Stephen McCaddy's great voice talks about the cat and the name of the town and French and coincidences and when do you call 911, and I love that.
Mrs. French's cat is missing. The signs are posted all over town. Have you seen Honey? We've all seen the posters, but nobody has seen Honey the cat. Nobody. Until last Thursday morning, when Miss Colette Vassine swerved her car to miss Honey the cat as she drove across a bridge. Well, this bridge, now slightly damaged, is a bit of a local treasure and even has its own fancy name, Pont de Flac. Now, Colette, that sounds like culotte. That's panty in French. And Vassine means pool. Panty pool. Flac also means pool in French, so Colette Piscine, in French Pantypool drives over the Pont de Flac, the Pontypool, if you will, to avoid hitting Mrs. French's cat that has been missing in Pontypool. 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 Pantypool. Pont de Flac. What does it mean? Well, Norman Mailer, he had an interesting theory that he used to explain the strange coincidences in the aftermath of the JFK assassination. In the wake of huge events after them and before them, physical details, they spasm for a moment, they sort of unlock, and when they come back into focus, they suddenly coincide in the weird way. Street names and birth dates and middle names, all kind of superfluous things appear related to each other. It's a ripple effect. So, what does it mean? Well, it means something's going to happen. Something big. But then, something's always about to happen.
Good stuff. So, housekeeping?
Yeah. What's been going on?
I had 2 weeks off of work, and now I'm back at work. The 2 weeks off were spent partly, we talked about, we did the social distancing with our parents, and then, I don't know, you heard my refrigerator story.
I did.
So we had a couple day delay, but it saved us tens of thousands of dollars, maybe, or at least thousands of dollars. Still don't have water in our fridge, which means we can't have ice. And it's been kind of hot, but there are worse problems for sure. We found out today, as did you, that we are starting school completely online.
Yep. That's a challenge. I mean, I think it's the right call, but
yeah, it is a challenge. And I know it's all over the world, I'm sure, but you know, people are kind of getting, pandemic fatigue.
Yes.
And unfortunately, you know, the consequence, like right now, our mayor today basically pointed out examples of things like, you know, we've had local spread at a funeral and everything. So he's like, yeah, don't go to cookouts. Don't go to funerals. No gathering is safe, is what he said. Which seems a little alarmist. However, we are having a nice spike.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers aren't big, but they are definitely spiky.
Yeah. And people seem resistant to wearing masks. I don't get it.
It's a new religion.
It's not even a big deal. It's not a huge inconvenience.
No. At this point, it's just a sign of being polite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And easy to do.
Yeah. I mean, I work in an office building and, I rode down in the elevator, and I think a lot of people who can work from home are still working from home from that building. So I don't see a lot of other folks in the elevator, but I got on the elevator, and we have a mask policy in the building. I got an elevator. Two guys got on the lower floor, and we all went down together. And these two guys, no mask. They were standing really close to each other, chatting it up. I'm assuming they're not family members, and just like no mask the whole way. I'm standing there in my mask, and you know, they kind of give me a look like I'm the asshole. I'm like, nope. No, I reject that look. I don't get it.
It's hard to, let's see, how do I put this? We don't know how bad this can get. So, you know, you have to kind of rely on reputable sources. But when all the sources are tearing one another down, oh, that's not true. When forces against science are tearing the science down, and then you have, you know, I mean, I don't know. My favorite is, my sister's a doctor. My friend's a doctor. My cousin once went to a chiropractor, and they say that masks can kill you. Like, okay. I mean, can't argue with that. What are you going to, like, there's no arguing it. It's like arguing religion. Can't do it.
Have I talked about the Netflix show Lenox Hill on the podcast?
Uh-uh.
I recommend it. Have you seen it at all? Have you seen?
No.
It's a documentary style show. So it's a real show. It's about a hospital in New York. And there's I forget if it's the entire hospital or just this guy's like unit within the hospital that he founded, and he was trying to do it in a new way. So he's a neurosurgeon, I believe, but he's also acts as he's on the board of the hospital and acts as an administrator and as a large part of his job. So it kind of shows that how he's trying to balance all that and kind of grow this hospital with a new way of doing things to really focus on patient care. And my wife and I started watching it because it's well done, and it kind of scratches that old like ER itch.
Mm-hmm. And you said it's documentary style, but it's not. This is a drama.
No, it's real.
Oh, it's really a doctor. Okay, all right.
Yeah. I was trying to not say it's not a reality show. They're filming a real hospital, real people at work. And there's as far as I can tell, there's not any sort of manufactured drama. I mean, it's a hospital, so it's intrinsically dramatic, you know, when they're dealing with people. And there's an ER, but there's also like a neurosurgery unit. So it's, you get like the weirdo ER cases, but you also get like brain cancer and cases like that. So it runs the full gamut. And it's, the doctors themselves, the ones that they focus on are really compelling. And, it's interesting to watch how they navigate. And I think it was filmed like late in 2018.
Okay.
I don't think they ever timestamp it, but that's the feeling I get. And it's 7 or 8 episodes, and they're really good. I do recommend the show. And then they released like a bonus episode because they were still filming. I don't know if they were filming for like a season 2 in the early part of this year. So they were filming at this hospital in New York in March and April and May. So they had, the show is about an hour long normally, but this special episode was only about a half hour. So not long, didn't show very much, but it kind of showed how they progressed. So this hospital that was really focused on very specific parts of patient care, it showed what the effect of the pandemic and the spike in New York was on them and these doctors. And it goes from, you know, March when it's just starting to May when it was really bad. It shows the effect on them. And because you're already emotionally invested in them, it was really hard to watch how things were changing for them and how they were dealing with it. 'Cause they dealt in the show with some pretty difficult things, and they dealt with them with, you know, professionalism and grace, and then seeing how they reacted to these different circumstances. It was actually really emotional to watch, and I do recommend it. I think Lennox Hill. It's worth watching the entire show just to have the investment to watch that show, that last episode.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds... Part of what my cousin, the doctor, thinks masks are wrong, I think is frustration because, you know, our mayor, who has his critics now for other reasons, but our mayor took this whole thing very seriously. And so we, in March, you know, we emptied out the hospitals. We, you know, we made it so that there would be plenty of resources, or as many resources as possible, given the human resources and the material on hand. We were prepared for that big hit, and we were prepared early. And it's maybe because we actually were one of the stops of a flight directly from Wuhan. So, you know, there was a good reason to do this. But then we never got hit with the big one, you know? I mean, we had several cases, and, you know, of course, that's what happens. But things haven't really spiked until now. I mean, we're going through our first wave now. where New York had it in March, you know, and like Phoenix, God, I wouldn't want to live in Phoenix or Houston. It sounds like, well, sorry, I wouldn't want to be sick in Phoenix or Houston.
Right.
Because they're, you know, they're suffering what New York did as far as the resources are gone. And it's not simple resources like masks and PPE and stuff. It's just human resources. Like, they may have enough beds and there may be technically enough ventilators, but you need enough employees to maintain all that equipment to supervise the patients.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's rough. So, well, even our leader says that things are going to get worse before they get better for the first time in this whole crisis. So, you know, we'll see.
Chalk that one up to no shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in good news, the environmental impact statement for Pebble Mine was released, so that got my company off the headlines for a little bit.
Oh, excellent. Apparently the environmental impact would be great.
No.
No?
No, that's what people are upset about.
Oh, that's funny. Okay. Yeah, turns out there's no fish this year anyway, so what are we worried about? No fish, no tourists, oil is like three for a dollar, whatever. But otherwise, I mean, okay, so to answer your initial question, how am I doing?
Yep.
You know, I'm back at work. I have a new trainee, and that's going great. I like having trainees. There's a new academy of people coming up. I'm enjoying that prospect because we get to ramp up to teach them. It's kind of a, this is my last, that was my last leave for a while. I mean, I think I took a day off in conjunction with Kelly's birthday, but that's about it until the holidays. So, things are okay. It's a little weird. Kind of back to normal, except that, of course, you know, my daughter's not going to go to school. My wife's going to only take one class and yet have to be to ride herd on my 10-year-old daughter, who I'm sure just because she's 10 means she's not going to be super motivated. But, you know, that's, it's going to be interesting. And I'm still kind of, I mean, maybe they get out of the house once a week. So that's kind of rough on them, too, except they're not real eager to. So Eric gets to go shopping all the time, which sometimes is good. Sometimes is just kind of frustrating, but whatever. Yeah. How are you guys doing?
We're doing okay. I think my wife is a little stir crazy now and then since she's working from home now. But, you know, if things keep going the way they are, she'll have some company pretty soon.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're doing okay. The kids are doing good. They are bummed about school, but I think they see some benefit there of you know, less responsibility. And I'm not sure how that's all going to shake out. We have a Zoom meeting with our school principal next week to talk about how things are going to go for the first couple weeks.
Like a big one or just the you guys?
A big one.
Okay.
Because I don't know how it went with you guys, but the organization of the school from home on sort of the ad hoc version of it when we were unexpectedly at home for the remainder of the year was not great at our school.
It was a shit show.
Yeah, and none of it was, it was all voluntary.
Yeah.
Like, here are assignments, but none of it counts.
Yeah.
So do it if you want.
And it turns out attendance was strongly encouraged, but not required.
Right. Right. So I'm trying to navigate all that and provide all of the motivation, without any sort of deadlines or accountability was rough. I'm hoping that it's not going to be the same circumstances this year, since they've had a lot more time to figure out what learning from home could and should look like.
I'm impressed by our superintendent. I've watched a couple of the videos that they put out, and she's very well spoken and pretty matter of fact, I think. So I don't know. I know some thought has gone into this whole thing. But yeah, if they don't, I mean, I guess, I don't even know. The whole thing is based on whatever our risk level is. Mm-hmm. But theoretically, our risk level could change every single day. But you can't suddenly shift gears and say, oh yeah, tomorrow everybody goes to school. You got to give some people time to ramp up.
Right. Yeah.
And who knows what the inside of the school looks like either. I think they're trying to do an in-person meeting with all the students' parents and the students with their teachers before class starts on mom's birthday.
Happy so birthday, we'll mom.
See how that goes. Yeah. I don't know. We live in weird times. And I've been trying not to engage in social media. Because, again, just makes me irritated, so.
When's the last time you watched the movie Logan?
Just before we talked about it.
Okay.
Why is it?
It's interesting. I watched it again recently to listen to the director's commentary, which I thought was good. So James Mangold also did Ford versus Ferrari. Have you seen that?
I have not.
It's real good. Hmm. Really good. Yeah, I watched it in its entirety the other night, not intending to. I was just going to watch a little bit and then go to sleep. That didn't happen. So it was way better than I expected. Anyway, Logan, I don't know how much you remember, but it's set sort of in the near future, and it's like, it's sort of dystopian light.
Yeah.
And while I was watching it and listening to the commentary, it occurred to me that that might be what we look like here pretty soon. You know, everybody just, it's like, it's almost kind of the world as normal, but just not everything just kind of sucks and it's not right. And there's lots of things wrong with society, but everybody's just still trying to muddle through.
Also sounds like Interstellar.
Yeah, Interstellar was a little bit more dire.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I know I had been recommending the Max Brooks book, Devolution. Mm-hmm. Devolution. Jason, turns out, Brother Jay, we'll let him speak for himself next time we all get together, or he and I get together. But he is not as impressed with it as I was. But I still recommend it. I still think it was... I mean, again, I'm not quite all the way through it, but I like the fact that you can be, or I could be interested in a story narrated by somebody who is a member of a group of people, none of whom I wanted to like. But Max Brooks does kind of a Stephen King thing where he actually makes you invested in the characters, which again is what writers should do. I was telling Jason, but I heard an interview with him on the Andy Richter podcast.
Oh, nice.
Three questions with Andy Richter, I think it's called. And I didn't want to listen to the interview at first. And when I first started listening to the interview, we're on actually a road trip. I was like, oh no, maybe I'm not going to like Max Brooks. Because turns out here's Max Brooks in a nutshell. Max Brooks is the son of Mel Brooks, right? And he is also the son of Anne Bancroft. So arguably one of the funniest guys is his dad. Mm-hmm. And an Oscar award-winning actress and really smart person is his mom. And he had severe dyslexia. So he was basically a big fuck up at school. But he had but he wanted to be a writer. With dyslexia, of course, is fun. Of course, he had the benefit of, you know, his family lifestyle. He would go, his family would go play tennis at this rich people's house or famous person's house in the Hollywood Hills or whatever. And he'd sort of hang out with Alan Alda and, you know, and all of like the Reiner kids and stuff. So when he expressed an interest in writing, Alan Alda says, hey, what do you got? If you got something, I'll read it and I'll give you notes. He's like, okay. So he gave a little, like as a 15-year-old or something, gave Alan Alda like a couple of novellas. And the guy like gave him notes. So it was very encouraging. And then he writes the Zombie Survival Guide. And the review, like he said, one of the reviews in like the LA Times or one of the big book review things said, this guy's dad is the funniest guy in the world, and this book is not funny at all. What a piece of crap. And he's like, yeah, it's not supposed to be funny. It's not a funny book. It's got funny parts to it, I guess, but it's more like a strange setting to give you some real facts. Because that's kind of what he does now, I think. He, besides the writing stuff, he also has a think tank that talks to like military sections, or the military at writ large, about preparedness and taking outmoded methodology and equipment and stuff and making it more modern and flexible. So, you know, so he had a question about, hey, what would happen if Bigfoot was real? But more like what setting do we need to put Bigfoot, what setting do we need to discover that Bigfoot is real? And then how do you make that interesting? So anyway, the whole interview is much more interesting than what I just gave you, but it gave me a perspective on it. And so maybe that gave me a little flavor of what I was in for when I was listening to the book, because you don't meet any Sasquatches for a while in the book. The big event, I won't even tell you. The big event is fun. And you may have already heard about, you know, one of these things that, hey, this is going to happen someday. We should probably be prepared, but we're not. But anyway, I'll let you.
That doesn't sound familiar at all.
No, not at all. Yeah.
Yeah, I needed something uplifting, so I'm reading Midnight in Chernobyl.
Of course. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way.